Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show here on Radio Liberty. This is the third week we've brought you these broadcasts, and we're going to have a special show tonight broken into two separate categories, one on education and the other on the typical application of the Wildlands Program of Sustainable Development. Freedom 21 is a group of local citizens who are participating in the advance of liberty. America, as most people know, has something wrong with it. Something ails our soul, ails our governmental administration. Something seems fishy about our economy, and our justice system seems to be falling apart at the seams. Well, this raises great challenges for all of us. And while we continue to live with the appearance of luxury, more and more, day by day, Americans become more discouraged about the cultural and political effects that we see in our country. So at Freedom 21, we're dedicated to the idea of organizing our society around the principles of individual liberty and equal justice. Here at Freedom 21, we make that organization focused on four areas of public concern. The first is the constitutional administration of government. Increasingly, it's becoming apparent that our federal government, our state government, and our local governments are not doing this. It calls upon each of us to begin to understand the principles upon which our nation was founded so that we can proceed to secure liberty for our children and our posterity. The second category is private property. You see, the collectivist movement on America understands, as George Washington did, that private property and freedom are inseparable. And when we disrespect our neighbor's use of their property, it is only a matter of time before someone disrespects our use of our property. And the third category we call family autonomy. It's putting children back into the charge of their parents, and not into the charge of a governmental school system that we're going to talk about tonight that seeks to undermine the child's orientation toward the principles that upon which America was founded. And finally, and Joan Perros in the first show is an expert in this, as well as a number of other local Freedom 21 participants, we look at the security and international implications of American security for the American people. Well, how do we at Freedom 21 do this? Well, we start with the publication of what we call the Advance Bulletin. Now, you can check into that at advancebulletin.net, or you can look at our webpage with loads of information that supports the kinds of information that we bring to the public via this radio station. And we have investigative journalism here, and we draw from stories around the country. And we give a good local as well as national political economic review of the circumstances that are leading us to a new government here in America. Well, before going further, I'd like to introduce my co-host for tonight, another Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participant, Mr. Brent Duncan.
Hello, Brent. Michael. Pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm glad to be here with you. Now, Brent and I know each other, as do the other hosts and co-hosts you'll hear on this show.
Ballet dads.
Well, we're ballet dads. So, you know, the way movements like this start is with ordinary citizens doing ordinary things in extraordinary times. And I think that's what we're facing.
Yes.
Well, here in Santa Cruz, we may be ahead of places like Chicago or Albany, New York, although in those two cases, I'm not sure that's really the case. But clearly what's happening in Santa Cruz, because it is so federally inspired, and so federally run. The federal government is in this town in so many ways, it's hard for an ordinary citizen to imagine the depth of federal government involvement here. But that federal government that has and is taking over Santa Cruz has your town, your state on its list too. This isn't a special partnership between one county in this country and the federal government. A federal government that is implementing a global plan called Sustainable Development, or Agenda 21. Our federal government regularly reports to the international community their progress on implementing the Sustainable Development Program. Now, as we talked about in the first week, 2 weeks ago, sustainable development is a global land use program. It is a global education program, and it is a global population control program. Now, the first two categories are in their heavy implementation here in the United States as we talk. Brent?
Yes.
Tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
A little bit about myself. I am an adjunct professor who teaches organizational psychology, marketing, and management classes at a private university. I also work as a director of employment and customer development for a land improvement company here in the Monterey Bay. And I'm also a self-styled family rights activist who works to advocate for academic development and student rights in the government school systems.
Well, that's a big job, and I can tell the audience here in Santa Cruz that some improvements have been made, temporary improvements, I suspect, at the Pajaro School District as a result of some of Brent's very courageous and well-reasoned activity.
Well, there are a lot of good people in the district who are working to improve the academic development of the children. It's unfortunate that not just here but around the country that there are so many special interests who are trying to use the schools to, you know, to promote their causes.
I'd like to remind the audience that the opinions that will be expressed here tonight are the opinions of the speakers and the speakers only. Now,
funny you should say that right after I talk.
there's no coincidence there, Brent.
No offense taken.
What we've done on these shows, if you've heard our two prior shows, is 2 weeks ago we talked about Sustainable Development's Wildlands Program. Now, the Wildlands Program is intended to take Americans off over half of the American landscape, completely devoid our landscape of human activity. And we can see so much evidence of that in our daily newspaper once we understand its basic theme. And in that first show, we had six activists from around the country. Each were battling their own wildlands project, people who understood, as we understand here in Santa Cruz, what the wildlands project is and how it comes to affect and destroy local communities. And, of course, at the end of that, if you say, well, I live in Urbana, I don't care what happens to those few people out in the rural areas. But once that program is completed, America will not be owned by Americans. And the American people will be subject to the whims of whomever it is, a centralized cabal, who then become in control. So that Wildlands Project is an important thing to understand. Last week, we talked about how Sustainable Development's Smart Growth Program has plans for urban areas. And those urban areas are subject to massive risk. Well, this is Michael Shaw. I'm back with my co-host Brent Duncan here at Radio Liberty for the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show. And we've been talking about what Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is and the sustainable development threat that that the American nation is presently being subjected to. Tonight we have a special call-in guest from the state of Minnesota. Mr. Michael Chapman. Michael, are you on the line?
With you.
Yeah, there, I can hear you now.
Okay.
Good. I'm here with Brent, and we're going to talk about education, No Child Left Behind, and the other things that you've got to help inform our audience, both a rural and urban audience tonight, people here in Santa Cruz, as well as in Chicago and Albany, New York, and various other places.
So, hello, Michael. It's great to see you.
Yeah, great to talk to you, Brent.
Well, tell us a little bit about who you are, Michael, and how it is you came to become involved in being concerned about yours and mine and everybody else's children's education.
Okay. Well, basically, I'm on the executive board of an organization, a grassroots organization out of Minnesota that began about 5 years ago called the Maple River Education Coalition. We're now called EdWatch, just because it's easier to say, and we have a website at edwatch.org that explains what we're about. And basically, we've been fighting the federal takeover of local education through the national curriculum standards and the national assessment testing. And what I've noticed, and one of the interesting things I heard you talking about sustainable development early in your introduction, is that what we know, of course, is that President Bush has made us now full partners once again with UNESCO. And UNESCO has just announced that the decade starting in 2005 through 2015 will become the decade of education for sustainable development, or the decade of sustainable development education.
Well, we're seeing that roll out already here in Santa Cruz. We're always a little bit ahead of the curve.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that, you know, my background is in history, and I own near 1,000 copies or volumes of our founders' original writings, and I use those to conduct textbook reviews. I've been doing that for about 15 years. And what I've noticed was once I learned the term sustainable development and started looking into it a little bit, I recognized that this stuff has been in the curriculum for at least 10 years.
So what does it mean? What does it mean to you, Michael, sustainable development?
Well, sustainable development is, of course, a marketing term. In fact, it costs the taxpayers millions of dollars to come up with that term because it assumes that you're in favor of sustaining development. When in fact the term sustainable development really is easy to understand when you define what it is and what it who its enemies are. The enemies of what they call a sustainable development is not resource depletion as we would assume. It is economic growth. The enemy of sustainable development is economic growth. And so what this is a redistributionist idea that a centralized power must control and take over control of the planet's resources, the property, and shape living space for all of us. And in that sense, where it connects into education is that in order to do this, we have to undermine the basic principles of freedom upon which this nation was founded. You can't have a sustainable development or what I would call a centralized power dictating our lives and our livelihoods unless you first get rid of those things which prevent that from taking place. And those are the base principles that founded this nation.
So centralized planning from a global collectivist government. Is that?
Yeah.
Is that
in fact, if you have children in public school, I would suggest you read their fifth grade and eighth grade, primarily social studies textbooks. In fifth grade, I would say if you aren't worshiping the Mother Earth by the time you're in fifth grade, well, you're just not paying attention in class.
Well,
and by eighth grade, then of course, they bring in all the introduction of global citizenship and the whole idea of global citizenship values and the sustainable development curriculum.
Well, I remember back in my eighth grade class, it was probably the most important year of my academic experience because it was the only time when I was really exposed to the ideals of the underpinnings of the Declaration of Independence and the idea of unalienable rights. And it is because of that that one is able to grow and practice a respect for the property and the lives and the liberty of other people. And that's really the way we secure our own liberty. Today, our children are being taught principles of unrestrained democracy and earth worship and a governmental system that bears no liking to the ideals upon which America was founded. Is that basically true?
Oh, absolutely. That is the curriculum. Basically, what you find out is that they are, most people assume now that the foundation of America is the Constitution, when in effect it isn't. The Constitution was only written in order to form a more perfect union. What formed us as a nation were the principles contained within the Declaration of Independence. We celebrate the birthday of this nation on July 4th, not August 27th, and that's for a reason. That's the date we signed the Declaration of Independence. And those principles, we ought to list them for your listeners, contained there are found nowhere else in any other nation's founding charters. Things like national sovereignty, the right of independence, natural law, that is, the law itself is higher than the king. Self-evident truths, these are truths that our founders believed to be for all time, for all people, and became the justification to a higher principle than government for our purpose in separating from Britain. All people are number four is all people are created equal before God. That gave us equal opportunity. What you see now is we're teaching multiculturalism or pluralism. That actually gives us equality of outcome based on group identity. So we're flipping these principles on their heads. Number five, of course, is creator-given unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or as our founders defined, property rights. If God gives you your rights, no man can take them away. Once you push a creator out of the picture, government becomes the highest authority and therefore can define your rights. And a government who defines rights can also take them away. Then number six is the purpose of government is primarily to secure your unalienable rights. And then the final one is popular sovereignty. That is the consent of the governed. Now, it was in order to form a more perfect union and to put these principles in practice in our nation that the Constitution was written for. Without the Declaration principles defining our rights and defining these principles, the Constitution can literally be made to say whatever you want it to say.
Well, of course, that is what's happening today. These principles have been turned on their head, and when people say something's not right, the stability of our society is at risk. The notions of reasonableness towards others seems to be fading away. Well, the answer, I think, to why that's the case has been summed up by you very well, Michael. It's the abandonment, mostly through ignorance, of the principles upon which mankind's greatest achievement, the founding of a country where each person has a life of their own that is not to be ruled by another.
That's right. And I might add that this is not by accident. This is a purposeful attempt to undermine these principles because we have folks who we call them the education cartel out here in Minnesota, but they are federal. It's federally driven through the U.S. Department of Education, who names and funds the federal standard, the writers of the federal curriculum. And the Bush plan, No Child Left Behind, continues to fund the national curriculum that began under Bill Clinton in H.R. 6. In fact, it actually names the national curriculum, written by somebody you ought to be familiar with out there, a man named Charles Quigley, who started the Center for Civic Education out of Berkeley. I think they're now based at UCLA. But if you look at the No Child Left Behind bill on page 243, you see that they actually, for the first time in the history of America, the federal government, using taxpayer dollars, is funding an organization, a nonprofit tax-exempt organization, solely without having anybody else be able to bid for this project. They now hold the contract for the National Standards in Civics and Government. They write the model curriculum. It's called We the People. And they hold the contract for the nation's report card, the civics framework. And let me just read to you what's posted at their website. You can all go to their website and see this, cce.org. Look at and read a document called Teaching Democracy Globally, Internationally, and Comparatively, the 21st Century Mission of Schools. Now listen to this carefully. In the past century, the civic mission of schools was education for democracy in a sovereign state. In this century, by contrast, education will become everywhere more global and international. We ought to improve our curricular frameworks and standards for a world transformed by globally accepted and internationally transcendent principles.
Michael, we're going to break now and come right back to that. Hold that thought. We're back here at Radio Liberty, and we're having a conversation with Michael Chapman of EdWatch.
And Michael is here explaining to us how the federal government, through an elite small group of folks, is restructuring the civics lesson for American youth as they begin to prepare us for something that has not been part of the American tradition, but an American collective that will be centrally managed, where human beings will be viewed as biological resources. And what we're talking about now is how it is that our children are not becoming exposed to the ideals upon which America was founded. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, I was just covering what the Center for Civic Education standards look like. Their textbook, We the People, actually opens by saying the purpose of this textbook isn't to teach facts about American history and government. Well, the question then, of course, is what is it for? And true purpose of this is to use history as necessary to prop up a social outcome-based agenda. That's where we get the term outcome-based education. Everybody figured that went away as a fad, but that's really what we're facing today in the national curriculum.
Michael, can you define for me what is outcome-based education?
Sure. Outcome-based education, as opposed to traditional education, let me first define traditional education. That was the idea of transmitting a body of knowledge to future generations for the purpose of maintaining liberty. That was the prime purpose of education in our founding era up through about till 1930s and 40s it began to change. What outcome-based education says is we now have a social outcome agenda. So we no longer teach history for the sake of history. We now teach history only as necessary to prop up what we want kids to think, act, and feel in a future. We need to prepare our citizens for a future. It's the reason we no longer teach history. We now have social studies. There's a social outcome agenda, and knowledge is only plugged in as necessary. In fact, let me read to you from the curriculum standards for social studies written by the National Council for the Social Studies. It says in there that we are moving toward the 21st century, and it's clear that the dominant social, economic, cultural, and scientific trends that have defined the Western world for five centuries are rapidly leading in new directions. They go on to explain how then we have to have a new sense, this calls for citizens with a new sense of purpose, and this is the mission of social studies. In other words, the mission of social studies is not the transmission of knowledge, but for the maintenance of liberty. It is for the creation of citizens with a new sense of purpose, and that sense of purpose is global citizenship. Under a universal set of principles defined by the United Nations. In fact, what you'll find out is the CCE promotes the Universal Declaration of Human Rights over and above the Declaration of Independence. They call the Declaration of Independence basically an antiquated document that was fine for the time, but now we need something new and better. But I would challenge your readers to pick up a copy of the Universal Declaration of Independence and read Article 29. Because Article 29 basically defines a new God, a new source of our rights. It actually ends by saying, these rights and freedoms that it has just enumerated in no case may be exercised contrary to the purpose and principles of the United Nations.
Michael, hold on.
We'll be right back. We're back here at Radio Liberty discussing with Michael Chapman of EdWatch the new education program. It's not so new, but it's now the embedded education program that is training our children to become citizens of a new global order. And Michael, that last portion that you were telling our audience is so key. Let's start that again and reinforce it for our listeners.
Yeah, you're saying that outcome-based agenda is really means the purpose of education is to advocate or promote social change?
It's to create new citizens for what the elite see as a new form of government.
You know, Michael, I'm actually seeing that here locally, and maybe our listeners around the nation have been seeing that also. If you look at the mission statement of your local school and see if it says something like, the purpose of our school is to create a good global citizen. We have that in our district, almost every district in our county, and almost every school in our county has that as a purpose.
Yeah.
Is that part of this?
Oh, absolutely. I've actually lectured in about 9 different states, and every state I go to, I do a little bit of research on their education system, and I can almost always find identical principles and identical mission statements, because keep in mind, this is driven from the federal level.
Well,
and it doesn't matter who the president is. It's coming out of the bureaucracies, the appointed government bureaucracies.
Well, I'd have to ask also then, you know, what's wrong with my child becoming a good global citizen? Is that something I should be against?
Well, it all depends on what you think America is and what it ought to be. I mean, I suppose in the sense of being concerned or wanting to know a lot about the world is fine. But when you start speaking of citizenship, there has to be some common connection we have with everyone in the world. And obviously, 9/11, for one, ought to have proven that it's very difficult to have everybody in the world come together under one common idea. Keep in mind, America is about bringing together people from all kinds of backgrounds and from all nations with the idea that we are all created equal. But our uniqueness, what made us unique and what these people came here for, was a single idea for liberty and freedom that is unique in the world. So to say we have to now water that down in order to fit in with the rest of the world towards the lowest common denominator, I can tell you without a doubt what has been proven throughout history is that lowest common denominator is always tyrannical.
Well, Michael, you were beginning before the last break to make what I think is a key point. You were talking about Article 29 of the Declaration of Human Rights, which is really the competing document to the ideals of individual liberty as expressed in the Declaration of Independence. And
yeah.
I have high school teachers tell me, well, they're basically the same. They're both respecting human beings. The Declaration, the UN Declaration, is based upon the U.S. Declaration. And finish for our listeners about Article 29.
The Universal Declaration of Human Rights actually enumerates our rights. Now, keep in mind, the Bill of Rights under our Constitution limited federal government. The First Amendment starts, Congress shall make no law respecting. In other words, it limits the federal government, leaving inalienable rights unenumerated. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights lists your rights, and although some of those rights sound reasonable, it ends with Article 29 declaring the source of those rights and declaring a new God. It says, these rights and freedoms may in no case be exercised contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations.
And of course, that means that there are some folks, obviously, the United Nations has some people behind it, they just don't disclose themselves very readily, but the folks behind the United Nations then can play willy-nilly with people's rights, because people's rights don't belong to them because they're a human being, people's rights belong to them because it's been granted to them by the powers behind the United Nations. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, if government, bottom line is, if government gives rights, government can take rights away. And they have just declared that they are the arbiter of rights, where our declaration, by contrast, says God gave us our rights. And government's only purpose is to secure those God-given rights.
Well, we're here at Freedom 21 Radio Show on Radio Liberty, and our guest is Michael Chapman, a man whom I know and who understands with those he's working with back in Minnesota the massive effect that our federal government is imposing on our children in a planned routine to change the nature of America. If they can't get our land from the baby boomers, they're going to have the minds of our children. And so it's time America began to come to its awakening, restore its roots, and grow forward into a glorious 21st century. We're back here at Radio Liberty. Our special guest, Michael Chapman, is discussing for us the federal education curriculum that is in your government schools. Welcome back, Michael.
Well, good to be with you.
Yeah, something, if you don't mind my stepping in here, something that you just said that was very striking to me and that might be interesting to highlight for our listeners, the difference between the Declaration of Independence and the United Nations Charter, is it basically coming down to that in the United States we have unalienable rights that are granted to us by a creator, and the purpose of the government is not to grant those rights but to protect those rights.
That's
and then,
right.
And then the United Nations Charter, it basically lists our rights and say that they come from the United Nations, from the government. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, Article 29 basically takes away what they just gave you in the rest of the document.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, it's important to understand, too, that even though these rights sound reasonable, what they have done as well and what they are now doing in the curriculum is raising something called the common good to an equal plane as individual rights. In other words, whenever you see the term individual rights, or very seldom will you see the term unalienable rights, but when you do see that in the curriculum or the standards or the assessments, you will always see that balanced now with your responsibilities. In other words, it's the rights and responsibilities of citizenship. And keep in mind, if government defines your rights, and they define your responsibilities, then something called the common good will take precedent over your individual rights. And I should just point out, just to illustrate that, in the CCE curriculum, We the People, look up the definition in the glossary of civic virtue. That is now defined as the dedication of citizens to the common good, even at the cost of their individual interests.
So what you're saying is that we have a federal education program that is programmed and patterned after the global sustainable development education program, that it is being pumped out from our federal government into our school districts, and you've talked about a textbook, We the People, that is a primary tool in the civics area of the educational program for achieving that end. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, and in fact, I'll go a step further. The We the People textbook is the model curriculum that all schools must adopt. That means that all textbook publishers are now writing their textbooks to conform to the CCE's standards, because that is the only textbook funded and approved by No Child Left Behind.
Thank you, Michael. We'll be right back. We're here with our special guest, Michael Chapman of EdWatch, or you can find it at edwatch.org, and we're talking about the federal curriculum that is changing the nature of America by indoctrinating our children into a different world view than the world view that is America's achievement. And so you're discussing with us the We the People book that is now mandated upon each school district in the country?
Well, not that particular book, but I'll tell you what, most of them are buying it because it's the only tax-subsidized textbook on the market now. They'll give it to free to a lot of districts when they're trying to get into a marketplace, or it's a very cheap textbook, $10 a copy, where most textbooks by major publishers might cost $30, $40, $50 a piece. So when you look at this, not only are they attracting you on cost, being tax subsidized, but it is the only textbook, it is the only curriculum approved as the model for teaching civics and government by the U.S. Federal government.
Well, what we see in the land use area, and I'm mostly involved in that, is the government is using carrots and sticks. They tell you it's a voluntary choice, that if you don't make the choice they want, somehow you'll be penalized. If you make the choice they want, they'll somehow give you some candy. And so that's what you're suggesting happens with the book curriculum in our government schools these days.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, No Child Left Behind did not end the Goals 2000 curriculum. It just made it mandatory. Now, they call it voluntary. They talk about the voluntary standards, but voluntary now means mandatory, Mike. You got to look it up in your new dictionary. What they've done is, through triangulation, made voluntary mandatory. through the national assessments of educational progress. In other words, states who sign on to No Child Left Behind will now become accountable for a certain kind of success. And that success is dependent on how well you test in NAEP. And NAEP is mandatory by law to be based on the national, get this, voluntary standards. So voluntary becomes mandatory through the testing mechanism.
Well, up is down. That's the nature of how the collectivist world works.
That's right.
Well, Michael, you've given us a good examination of the principles of freedom that are being abandoned by, in our classrooms and being substituted with this political globalist orientation that that really seeks to collectivize the minds of our children and the lands of our co-citizens. I also know that you have a lot to say about the nature of history and how it's being taught in America and what our children are learning about American history.
Yeah, basically, again, history for the sake of history is no longer in the schools. It is social outcome-based education. So what you have to do in order to build towards a global citizenship ideal is tear down what was successful about America. So what you'll find is everything negative presented. The stories about America are all in a negative light. They redefine our founders as racists because some of them owned slaves. These kind of things, and talk about this. By the way, just on that point, our founders inherited slavery. They did not invent it, and they worked tirelessly to get rid of the institution. Jefferson, of course, wrote in his Notes on Virginia that you can still see at the Jefferson Monument those great words that were in reference to slavery when he said, God who gave us life gave us liberty, and can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we've removed their only firm basis from the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God, and on he goes. But what they're doing is they're undermining our founders, they're undermining our principles. They're teaching that America is this negative, imperialistic aggressor of the world. In all other cultures, only the positive sides are presented. The Native American teaching is one in particular. You want to talk about the most horrendous form of slavery known on the planet, just look at the true history of the Native American people. And not to pick on them solely, every culture known to mankind in the history of the world has practiced slavery. It certainly doesn't make it right, but it wasn't until the Declaration Principles came along that declared all men created equal that we finally had an ideal that was held up there as a model to break the back of slavery worldwide.
Yeah, that goes back to what you were saying earlier about the principles upon which our nation were founded. If you compare what the Founding Fathers did with the Declaration of Independence and then following up with the Constitution, you're looking at what today in businesses they call, you know, sound strategic management principles, where businesses get together and they decide, why do we exist? What are we here for? And what do we want to accomplish? You know, that's basically what the Founding Fathers were doing, were establishing the purpose of the country or the vision for the country. But just because they made those statements does not mean that those things came about. That purpose or that vision
that's
becomes
right.
Like a guiding star, something that for which you always strive, but which you never accomplish. But you always work towards achieving that, and then
that's
you
right.
Build an organization by which your country or by which your company can work towards achieving those goals.
That's right. The founders set the bar high, and we have been striving to meet that standard. And as we've moved along, we've been very successful because of that standard. The new philosophy of education, which is the education cartel calls constructivism, is the idea that knowledge and principles are no longer constant because there is no such thing as absolute truth. In fact, they'll tell you they absolutely believe there's no absolute truth, so they contradict their own philosophies. But in a sense, what they do is they put an evolutionary worldview in play that says truth itself evolves. Principles change and evolve with the times, and we are in a constant state of evolution as a society, and that the principles of the past were simply ideas that worked for the time, and it's now time to move on.
Wow.
You know, I think the listening audience has to look in their neighborhoods or look in their own households or look at their children's households and ask the question, why is it so many teenagers are so alienated from the values of their parents? And I think you've just suggested what the nature of that answer is. It's that mom and dad have let the kids out of their sight too long into the hands of some folks, not all the teachers, but it only takes a few teachers to spoil a 12-year-old's perspective on what is a healthy political economic system. And if they're not exposed to the grand ideals that are America, they'll never be able to recapture the glory of that vision.
Well, you've just hit one of the things that bothers me, and that is we as parents have basically abdicated our responsibilities, Michael, to a government. We're allowing the schools to raise our children and to teach our children values that they should be learning in the home.
Yeah, and that's what they're measuring. That's why we assess our children. We no longer test them. You see, testing suggests objective academic knowledge measurement. What we now assess them because it's like we assess our car for its value. We are now assessing our children to determine their value to this future new society based on how well they demonstrate that they now think in this new method.
And in that process, the history of the United States becomes the history of the victims of the United States. It's just amazing.
That's right. And one of the tools, I should point this out because it's very critical to understand this, and I use that term on purpose, is critical thinking. You see, under the new term, under the new definition of the term, critical thinking does not mean what it appears to mean on the surface. You and I would assume critical thinking means teaching children how to think for themselves and to learn to discern truth. But critical thinking now, let me just read you the definition of it out of Houghton Mifflin's fourth grade teacher's guide. This section describes the goal of helping students to progress to higher order skills in thinking. Critical thinking that is focused on deciding what to believe or what to do. So it's about shaping citizens for a future world. And let me just give you a couple examples. This is a critical thinking question I found in a Macmillan textbook. Listen to the phrase of the question. Why do you think Mao Zedong was able to win the support of so many Chinese people? Now, first of all, it's based on bad history. Mao Zedong did not win the support of so many Chinese people.
He won the support of a few thugs.
That's right. And he had the support of socialists who wanted to institute a communist regime. But the question begins with the phrase, why do you think? The phrase of the question has just told the student what they think. They have no choice now but to go out and gather evidence to support the author's biased history. And this is how you shape thinking through critical thinking rather than teach thinking. Critical thinking.
And that word, whenever you stand up and try to advocate for child rights in the school, that phrase, critical thinking, gets thrown out constantly. I'll hear it 2 or 3 times in a night. You know, what do you have against critical thinking? Well, the question I have is, critical, when we're teaching children to be critical thinkers, I have to ask, critical of what? Critical of whom? And when these people say critical thinking, they seem to be saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, they seem to be saying to think more like them, which is usually along the lines of a globalist collective.
Yes.
And how much critical thinking is allowed in a collectivist society?
That's right. Very little. There's only one form of thought. Now, keep in mind, we do not teach truth. We do not teach right from wrong. We now teach tolerance, diversity, and multiculturalism, which have also been redefined to mean that all ideas are equal. So therefore, there is no critical thinking to discern truth. There is only balancing different perspectives.
Well,
interesting, I gave a lecture on exposing the truth behind critical thinking, and a high school English teacher brought her class to listen and to challenge me. And I explained the entire school, the work system, that was one of the purposes of the lecture, and exposed some of the falsities in their history and this kind of thing. Well, one of the girls stood up and challenged me, and she said, you know, what you say might sound good, but I know that there are other perspectives out there, and I haven't heard them yet, so I need to hear all the other ideas before I can decide what to believe. Now, at first, that sounds reasonable until you realize that if I had been a math teacher up there teaching her that 2 plus 2 equals 4, would she still have responded that way? See, if she had said, I don't believe you, I want to see the evidence for myself, I would have congratulated her as a critical thinker.
Mm-hmm.
But because she wants to balance different perspectives and see which one sounds best to her and then decide what to believe, she is a synthesis thinker.
Precisely.
And I told her, I said, the point here is, it's much more efficient to learn the truth. And then you'll recognize all the false perspectives out there. You'll never run out of false perspectives or alternative perspectives.
And you just hit the nail on the head. A true critical thinker is somebody who can recognize the BS from the truth. Somebody who can assess different element, differing views, and recognize right and wrong. They can discern. They can discern the truth, and they can make their decisions accordingly.
And they can find out facts, and they can reach conclusions. See, those are two terms that are kind of a passé now in the new education era. Facts, knowledge, and conclusions have been replaced by attitudes, values, beliefs, and alternative perspectives.
And that takes us back to the Sustainable Development Education Program for this next decade and shows us how it is that our schools, when they create special funded programs to teach the children about the watershed and the reverence that they must give to all species in the watershed other than the destructive humans.
Mm-hmm. See, one of the ways the propaganda like that works so well is they don't overtly come to the conclusion for the child. Instead, they control the evidence that they're going to see. They use their biased so-called science. They prop up false history or all negative or one-sided history and then say, why do you think we should protect the environment? Why do you think we should do these things? And they have no choice but to go out and gather conclusions for what the author's bias. And that conclusion is often based on junk science.
Well, that's one of the common threads we see in the Land Use Application of Endangered Species Act and in so many areas of our society. The smart growth models for transportation, as we discussed last week, are predicated on junk science, as are these educational principles. If you have a question that you'd like to address to Michael Chapman, you can reach us here in the Monterey Bay at 464-8295 or toll free if you're out of this area at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237.
Would also like to hear if you're seeing this in your own school districts.
Yeah, Michael, can I also plug my video?
Yes, you can.
I've got a video just produced recently called America's Censored Heritage, where I explain a lot of this. And what I've done is I've actually scanned in textbook examples and our founder's original sources, so you can see up on the screen the comparison between the two. And I teach you how to discern truth by looking at facts. But that's America's Censored Heritage, and it's available at my website, AmericanHeritageResearch.com.
Well, I have seen Michael Chapman's work, and to see his video productions is a remarkable experience. I had been quite overwhelmed by watching the land use movement and concerned about the future of our country and the prospects for our children. But when I saw Michael Chapman speak on these issues and saw how our children are being indoctrinated, that was the point where I really said to myself, well, I can't just sit back and enjoy the beach as I had hoped to at this point in time in my life. There's some things that need to be done. We all need to take some approach to doing this. And a good way to get started, if you're concerned about how your children or your grandchildren or how society's young people are being educated, a great place to start is at the American Heritage Research.com and edwatch.org, because the folks in Minnesota are way ahead of this game. In fact, tell us a little bit, Michael, about the political dynamic regarding the No Child left behind legislation in your state?
Well, we just passed out of the Senate Education Committee a unanimous vote to reject No Child Left Behind.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Believe it or not, this is a nonpartisan support for this. You know, the Democrats are jumping onto this as well as the Republicans. Nobody likes their children to be controlled by the federal government.
Well, and that's why Americans need to wake up now. Our land is being stolen. Our children's spirits are being stolen. It's time to take your approach, take it to your neighbors, take it to your friends and associates. Refer them to shows like this. Refer them to freedom21santacruz.net to get some information. Refer them to edwatch.org. And there's a whole host of emerging groups all around the country who are catching on that our federal government is taking our property, our liberty, and our life. Here we are back at Radio Liberty for the third Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. Now, just because we've got the name Santa Cruz in our title doesn't mean that we're not a message for the entire country. Because what's happening here is merely a preview of what either is or is about to happen in your community. The big collectivist machine headed up in Washington, headed up above that in Geneva, and brought down to Sacramento and the governor's office there and right into this county and every county in the country are the remnants, not the remnants, are the seeds or the mounting bushes called sustainable development, a plan to control where we live, how we live, and what we think. And we're here tonight with Michael Chapman, who is giving us an insight into what our schools are doing with respect to the indoctrination of political principles into the minds of our children, principles that are totally and the total antithesis of the principles upon which our country was founded. Welcome again to Radio Liberty, Michael.
Thank you.
Yeah, Michael, you're talking about the No Child Left Behind and the opposition, the successful opposition you've had to it in Minnesota, and how you've actually been able to get No Child Left Behind out of the state. Is that right?
Well, no, not yet. No, we've got a long way to go yet.
Okay.
We have a Democratic-controlled Senate and a Republican-controlled House, so it's kind of a unique dynamic there. Unfortunately, we've got a Republican governor who supports No Child Left Behind. And so the House is probably going to be where the problem lies. The Senate actually voted in their education committee to reject the money. We've done an independent audit in the state, as has Utah and a couple other states, I believe, have done this, and found out that the cost to implement No Child Left Behind is going to be huge compared to the benefit received. So just on cost alone, it's worth rejecting, but we are rejecting it. Actually, I think we're the only state that is going after it based on its content. The problem that we see is this radical agenda in content, forcing this into our schools. And keep in mind, this began under Goals 2000 and H.R. 6 specifically, naming the federal curriculum models. Now, No Child Left Behind came along. The Goals 2000 was the carrot in the booster rockets, so to speak, that put the shuttle in orbit. And No Child Left Behind is mission control, sustainability, sustaining what has been launched by the Goals 2000 legislation.
Well, I know that there are other states following your lead, and the action is beginning to brew on No Child Left Behind. And we're about ready to welcome back our listeners in Eastern Washington. Welcome back to Radio Liberty. We're talking with Michael Chapman, and we're focused right now on the legislative hurdles that the federal No Child Left Behind legislation is having in the state of Minnesota. I've been reading that Utah and various other states are doing the same thing. So if you're listening to this, check in with edwatch.org and find out how it is that Michael Chapman and Senator Michelle Bachmann there in Minnesota have been successful at raising this issue and getting everybody, left, right, Republican, Democrat, liberals, and conservatives united in one idea. And that's the idea that truly does still unite Americans, despite the fact that we've got change agents everywhere trying to indoctrinate our children and take our land. You know, but the rural people in America, almost all of us, when we find out what's going on, none of us like it. So it's time to shake the cobwebs, and if you're focused on educational issues, there's no better example to follow than Ed Watch and what's now being called the Bachman legislation there in Minnesota that is waiting for duplication in your state.
Yeah. And I might also say that we have an excellent resource available at Ed Watch. It's a book written by a professor of political history, Alan Quist, called Fed Ed. What's the subtitle on that? It's a great subtitle. Fed Ed, the new federal curriculum and how it's enforced. And that kind of explains how this federal curriculum came down through the channels, through contracts signed by the 50 states for a promise of money, of course. That's always the driving force. And really opened the door. All 50 states signed on to the federal contracts that brought this system into the states. And that's why it's replicated everywhere we go. We see the exact same, like you said earlier, Brent, the same mission statements. We see the same philosophy, the same goals, everything, whatever state we go to. And I might also add that it's important for people to understand that the school-to-work system is also part of the federal No Child Left Behind law. That did not go away with the new administration.
So in other words, when mom and dad take their little 8-year-old down to the bus stop and say goodbye for the next 8 hours, these children are going off for a program to make them workers, not to make them whole-bodied and full-thinking individuals, but to make them workers in a state system of work.
That's right. The entire system was broken into three major pieces. That was Goals 2000 that gave you the content formula for education, School to Work, which gave you the structural change in education, and then the Workforce Investment Act that created this series of workforce investment boards that would then govern what those schools taught for the needs of a planned economy. Under No Child Left Behind, School to Work in name was changed. That is now referred to, it is now called the Smaller Learning Communities. Doesn't that sound wonderful, Mike?
Well, you know, it sounds like the creeping tyranny that it is. Michael, I want to thank you very much for being our special guest here tonight.
What a pleasure.
It's a conversation with you can go on all night long, and I know that from reality. So we hope to have you back again soon if we can find your time available, because there's so much more to talk about in this subject, and you are such an incredible American resource for disseminating this information to a nation hungry for this kind of information.
Well, thank you, Michael. And I might just say, if people need to hear more about the school-to-work system, get our video, Guinea Pig Kids. That explains the entire structural change in the workforce planning system.
Well, that's edwatch.org and AmericanHeritageResearch.com.
Yes.
And thank you again very much for calling in from Minnesota, and great work there in Minnesota, and let's hope that wonderful idea spreads around the country. Mom and Dad, the children belong to Mom and Dad, and that's where education starts. It starts with Mom and Dad making decisions about the values that should be inculcated into their children, and No Child Left Behind does exactly the opposite.
Well said, Michael. And thank you, Michael.
Thank you both. Take care.
We'll be back here at Radio Liberty for the second hour after short music and embrace.
Farmers better think about taking a stand, or they round you up and trade you a cup of kindness for your land. Because when you're all locked up in cages made from tractors, rakes, and...
Welcome to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. Hour number two on this Wednesday night, broadcast to you from the Radio Liberty Network. We're here for the second hour, and we're going to continue to talk about the sustainable development assault on the United States, because what we need to be able to bring Americans to come to an understanding of is what liberty is all about. Because once we understand the basic rudiments of liberty, and in our last hour, Michael Chapman did such an outstanding job of laying down those principles and then discussing them in a way that the average eighth grader can understand. And for those of us who've been fogged over as baby boomers, you know, we might have to scratch a little bit to have those words make sense. But you talk to those, you talk to a 13-year-old or an 8-year-old about the ideals of liberty, and they just intuitively understand. And it's not an idea that needs to be soured, because the world need not be a place where the powerful take advantage of the law and the economic system to disadvantage those who are maybe talented but who are not built with the kind of steel that it takes to steal things from people. So we're here in the second hour, and what we're going to do is talk about a couple of things. One, I want to give a little review of what sustainable development is in just a broad scope of things. And then my co-host, Lisa Rudnick, who we'll introduce here shortly, and I will discuss how sustainable development is being implemented here in Santa Cruz. You may say, well, I'm not in Santa Cruz. I'm not too interested in that. But in reality, what's happening here in Santa Cruz is a plan, in the words of our congressman, a plan that is to be repeated throughout this country. Santa Cruz isn't the only model. There are other communities that are even further along than we are. But it certainly does shine as a beacon in the collectivist world as a place where sustainable development is galloping forward. You see, there are but two premises for the establishment of government. It's either that government exists for the purpose of protecting an individual's unalienable rights, as Michael Chapman talked about, or government exists to control human action. And, of course, that's what sustainable development is to control all the resources of this land through a land use program. And it's to control the minds of our children through an educational process that we just heard about in great explanation. And it's also to control, then, population, our movement, our number, our actions. It's a collectivist idea. It's the notion that a few know better than the rest of us and that we all better shape up. That's not coming at us via an army, it's coming at us via a system of councils that are being implemented and controlled by the federal government and some other active operators, like global governance organizations. They like to call themselves non-governmental organizations, but they're entities that are actually accredited by the United Nations for purposes of establishing sustainable development throughout America. They include groups like the Sierra Club and the Nature Conservancy, the National Teachers Association, the American Planning Association. There's over 2,000 such agencies. Even the American Farm Bureau is an accredited United Nations NGO. Now, that doesn't mean certainly that everyone at the Farm Bureau or everybody at the Sierra Club are bad human beings bent on collectivizing America. But at the source, they're influenced with these policies, some more than others. Certainly the Sierra Club and the Nature Conservancy are prime examples of these kinds of organizations bent to make America into a new form of government. Here we are at Radio Liberty, and we're going to be discussing sustainable development this evening. And we're going to talk about how it's implemented in a place like Santa Cruz, but this could be anywhere. 2 weeks ago, we had folks from Maine and Wisconsin and Texas, South Carolina, and more places that described essentially the same kind of operation that was being engaged in order to move people off rural lands and to put rural lands under the control of government. As we come back here for the next segment, we're going to talk about the system of councils that are implementing sustainable development. Well, Well, welcome back to Radio Liberty as we take on our third week here of discussing sustainable development and its clutches that are everywhere in this country and everywhere in our lives. Now, the pressure of sustainable development is just beginning to build. More and more people are going to become victimized by it, and the responding attention and reflection on the values of liberty will begin to increase. Now, for yourself and for your family, it's much better to take this on earlier rather than to evade the reality that besieges America today, because it's only through our coordinated and consistent efforts is it that we're going to be able to save posterity's right to have a life of their own. So we talk about councils. How does that work? Well, what does occur is that the federal government will come into an area pursuant to mid-range councils, and it's not just the federal government. Sometimes it's NGOs that or GGOs, as I call them, that come in and set up series of councils that operate through facilitated stakeholder consensus meetings. What that means is that the outcome is predetermined, and manipulation techniques, much like what Michael Chapman described in respect to the indoctrination of our children in our schools, are used on people who attend these. Now, if you're like me and you go to these meetings, you end up saying, boy, these are just silly people with silly ideas and doesn't make any difference. I'm not going to spend my night away from my family down at these meetings where you can't say anything unless you say what it is they want you to say. If you were to bring up something like private property, they're going to ignore you. So ignore these things. They don't seem to mean anything. Well, they do, because what they end up doing is they come up with a set of best management practices or other kinds of recommendations that go to your local elected officials. And increasingly, whether you're Democrat or Republican, you rubber stamp these sustainable development ideas because it's been sold through the party machinery to all of the elected officials who are Democrats and Republicans. You don't hear them talking about sustainable development in a way that exposes it for what it is, because if they did that, the party machineries, both the Democrat and the Republican, would simply nix their effort. So what we're really describing here is something that I call a Soviet. Now, people say, oh, no, America's not Soviet. That was Russia. Well, what is a Soviet? Well, a Soviet is really a simple idea once it's put in front of the people. It has three components. First, a Soviet is a system of councils that report to an apex council. Now, that could be a federal agency. That could be the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, a UN NGO that is in Canada that is directed to create sustainable communities throughout America. Now, my county, Santa Cruz County, has a contract with ICLEI for purposes of implementing sustainable development. We'll be right back. We're back at Radio Liberty at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show, and I was describing the nature of sustainable development, and in specific, describing or giving a definition for the word Soviet. Because, you see, sustainable development is really a system of government that is a Soviet. So what is Soviet? What does it mean? Well, there's three primary components. The first is that a Soviet is a system of councils that report to an apex council and implement a predetermined outcome. Secondly, members of a Soviet council are chosen by virtue of their willingness to comply with that outcome and their one-mindedness with the group. You see, Soviets require groupthink. That's what communism is. Communism is where all people think to pursue the common good as they've been instructed to do. And thirdly and finally, and this is the real tip-off for a Soviet, Soviets are the operating mechanism of a government-controlled economy. Now, that can be socialism, or it can be government-private partnerships. You gotta remember, when Stalin was proclaiming socialism in Russia back in the 30s and 40s, it was Benito Mussolini and Adolf Hitler who adopted this other form of Soviet-style economics, or fascism. Fascism is nothing other than when government combines with business to the glory of both of them and to the destruction of the individual, destruction of the consumer, and ultimate destruction of the economy. So that's what a Soviet is. So as you begin to see these councils coming into your town, and we'll talk about some specifics here in Santa Cruz in a bit so that you've got the concrete to go along with that general idea, you'll find that these things are happening in your community because the federal government, like in education, is in every community in this country doing things that it is not authorized to do. See, the consequence of setting up Soviet systems is you lose your separation of powers, both between your branches of government and in the federal system. That is, you've got a federal, state, and local government. They all begin to merge because here in Santa Cruz, the federal government has partnered with a local government. Well, so much for a separation of powers. It also destroys representative democracy because Soviets work on regional basis. So when you look at your regional water board or your regional power board, you can see that the infrastructure is being established to govern us through regional councils. It also eliminates the checks and balances that come when you separate business from government. You know, when you combine business with government, there are no checks and balances. It's the biggest thug wins. Well, you know, the coup has happened. You know, the new system of government is coming into place, a new system of economics, and a new justice, a justice that looks at social conditions and doesn't look at equality as its measurement. Sustainable development runs on three E's. They put these in concentric circles. They call it equity. Well, that's using the law to re-engineer humanity. Economy, that's to redistribute internationally America's wealth and the replacement of free enterprise with government-business partnerships. And then they take this left-wing, right-wing collectivist combination and they lay over it the environment, where they put nature before man. That's how they're able to, in what they are attempting to indoctrinate our children toward, as well as ourselves, and it's what we must resist. Because it is man that is this planet's greatest resource, and it certainly is going to be a planet that is run by men. The question is whether it is run by free men or men working to a narrow elite who are seeking to control them. Now, before I introduce my co-host, Lisa Rudnick, I want to share with the audience our experience with the beginnings of Agenda 21 or sustainable development in this community. Now, those terms are interchangeable. Sustainable development, Agenda 21, are right on the United Nations webpage, very prominently positioned. The terms are used interchangeably by the political globalists who are not just Americans, but they're various elites throughout the world. Well, Lisa, I want to introduce you to this audience. Lisa is a Freedom 21 participant, my co-host tonight. We have co-hosted shows on the local AM stations in the past and know each other well, because if there is any field capable general for monitoring the government's encroachment upon us, it is Lisa Rudnick. So I want to welcome you here tonight and say this is a great pleasure to have this conversation with you.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you and I both were sort of on the fringe of the green movement, I guess you could say, and both were quite involved in a number of organizations that were involved in natural or ecological issues. And lo and behold, somewhere, around 1995, I remember you calling me and saying, you got to come up to this Agenda 21 series of meetings being held up here in the mountains. And I said, well, they sound like fruitcakes to me, and I don't think I should worry about what I've heard about this. He said, no, you ought to come. Well, why don't you take it from there and describe what the local Agenda 21 program for Santa Cruz was, innocently advertised in the mid-90s, and then we'll pick up the story after you describe how this council arrangement, remember Agenda 21 is sustainable development. In your community, it might be called the visioning process or comprehensive planning or smart growth, but the original term, which didn't market very well, is Agenda 21. Here in Santa Cruz, we are an official Agenda 21 community. You can see it at the ICLEI that's the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives website. Now they're the NGO that's behind the sustainability movement here in the United States. But tell us about those local meetings, Lisa.
I'd be glad to. I first heard about Agenda 21 in 1994, and at the time I thought it sounded like a good program, a good process to bring people of opposing views together to discuss which issues they might agree on. At the time, I had innocently happened upon the issue of timber here locally. I say innocently happened upon it because of the fact that I didn't own timber and I had no idea what I was getting into when I went to my first public hearing and had an opinion on the issue. So in any event, I went to a public hearing, I had an opinion, and boy, did I catch some flack. And that's when I knew something was wrong with some of the, not only the issues, but the players here locally. So I thought, well, I'll go to some of these Agenda 21 meetings with some of these people that have been berating me for having an opinion different than their own, and ended up having several meetings with these people where they decided all of a sudden that they couldn't work with the group. Now, what the local Agenda 21 group was based upon, there were 12 roundtables, and you were supposed to be able to go and sit with these people, again, with opposing views, and work out what you had in common, what you couldn't agree on. Well, they decided they couldn't work with the group, and they would walk out. So I proceeded for 2 years to go to meetings with the people who thought they could work together on these issues. After 2 years, we came up with a scientifically based document on our one roundtable, which was on ecosystem and biodiversity. And after 2 years, came up with this report, didn't hear anything for about a year, and then got a call from the coordinator of the local Agenda 21 program, and there was a draft that we were supposed to be reviewing. When I looked at the draft, it barely resembled what our meeting group had come up with. That's when I knew something was terribly, terribly wrong. It ended up, as Michael was talking about earlier, there was a predetermined outcome. The process allowed some of us to do all the work and to put together the framework for what would look to be a credible document after the other people got to it and added all sorts of political nonsense to it, such as one of the things they wanted to add was we were going to triple the amount of government-owned open space in this county. I quickly pointed out to them that half the county was already a park, and that was going to make up more than 100%. In any event, my eyes were open to this process, this local Agenda 21 process that I thought was something good. I meant well when I participated in it, and I saw that the people behind it did not mean well. What came out of it was a document that seeks to control everything. Agenda 21 does seek to control every aspect of your life. And Michael's right, it is synonymous with sustainable development because President Clinton set up the President's Council on Sustainable Development in order to implement Agenda 21. I have the press release from that.
Well, and of course it was George Bush Sr. who brought sustainable development to America when he signed the Rio Accords in 1992. So this is truly a nonpartisan assault on America, and does give rise to the recognition that what America faces today is not a left, right, or liberal conservative battle. It faces a liberty versus tyranny battle, collectivism versus individual liberty. And unfortunately, it appears that our last three presidents are wholeheartedly supportive, without disclosing to the American people, but they support the implementation of the Sustainable Development Program because it is definitely happening, not just in education, but in land use. You know, I have to say back, I was on the Ecological Council for Agenda 21 local also, and this was, it was just very bizarre. I couldn't take it seriously, Lisa. I looking back, am so pleased how you continued through that whole process and battled them to prove the point you just made, that is that it was a predetermined outcome. But gee whiz, the folks who were talking about not letting any resource be used, and how Mother Nature, that human beings had to be reduced in population, and that they needed to be put into narrow zones, and this and that. And I would have thought that was just nutty, until I see on the Federal Department of Agriculture the emblem for the United Nations and sustainable development, and that's now what is governing our farm policy. That's why our farmers are being assaulted, and we're going to talk about that as we proceed into the latter parts of this hour, how the farmers here and the farmers wherever you are, the farmers that supply all of us, are under siege, and unfortunately most of them don't know it because they're not getting the word from the associations and organizations where they ought to be getting it. And so that's why it's important to listen to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show, so that you can tell your friends and tell your associates, tell your relatives who live in the rural areas about this problem. But if you're in the urban areas, don't think that there's not a plan for you. It's called Smart Growth. Welcome back at Radio Liberty. I'm here with my co-host, Lisa Rudnick, and we're talking about sustainable development and in general, and we're going to be talking about it specifically here in Santa Cruz. Now, if you want to make a call and ask a question or make a comment about this show or our earlier Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio shows, you can reach us on the Monterey Bay at 464-8295, and if you're outside the Central Coast of California, you can call at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Well, Lisa, we're talking about the 1990s effort locally to adopt a local Agenda 21 plan. You know, as we move through that story, we find that this report, which was sealed in 1997, I presumed back then that it was just going to find the dust of waste, because I couldn't imagine any reasonable set of government officials beginning to ever think about implementing a plan that would deny posterity its freedom. But lo and behold, it's a pretty open and overwhelming force that has hit the rural and now the urban dwellers of Santa Cruz.
That's right. It really is focusing so heavily right now on the rural areas that I have been witnessing in the last 10 years that I've been actively fighting some of these things, being a private property rights activist. I have noticed what is certainly rural cleansing taking place. There are a number of programs here in Santa Cruz County that, when you put them together, do equal rural cleansing. In the late 1990s, our County Board of Supervisors zoned a lot of the forest land locally here in Santa Cruz out of timber, meaning they could no longer manage their timberland. They zoned out something like, I think, 100,000 acres of privately owned forest with a one fell swoop, no environmental study. They were protecting the environment. So now 100,000 acres in this county cannot be touched for any management.
Now let's hang on for a minute. Let's suppose that you live on that redwood forest, and there's not much else you can do with a forest than to use the trees to sustain what's happening. But you know, it's not just that. Some people say, oh, but trees are important. Well, they're not that important. They're not more important than human beings and the ideals of freedom. But what's happening in our forests has happened throughout this state and throughout the West, is that our forests are becoming clogged with trees. And so instead of having healthy fires from time to time, what we have is infernos that destroy everything ecologically, all in the name of shutting down the private property owners who owned those forests in the first place. I know some very, very sad stories, I'm sure we'll talk about one later on tonight, of landowners in this mountain who have been totally, totally overwhelmed by the force of government in its effort to steal their property.
That's right. And many of these people have been on the properties for generations. They are good caretakers. Our county was clear-cut at the turn of the century, the early 1900s. And in place of the big redwoods came back many, many little redwoods.
Well, we're here at Radio Liberty on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show, and we're about ready to take a break for some of our stations, but we'll return with you very shortly. Just remember that sustainable development is the plan to control America for the 21st century. It's something you need to know about, and as you do, you'll become involved. There are plenty of ways to become involved in this battle, and it's not one we need to fear as long as we take action. Well, Lisa, there are still a lot of people in our town who aren't familiar at all with Agenda 21, and then, of course, there are those folks who like to accuse us of being black helicopter people. You know, but one thing I've learned is when you get some of these council facilitators up there taking that action. What you've got is somebody who's probably up there driving the black helicopter, because it's likely they know what they're doing. But just to set aside any doubt that Agenda 21 is here in Santa Cruz, I'm going to read a letter that you and I received from our congressman, Sam Farr. Now, Sam Farr is Leon Panetta's successor as congressman here on the central coast of California. Sam Farr is the only man in Congress who now or has ever flown the United Nations flag in the hallways right outside his office building. But for all of our hard work, Lisa, on the Agenda 21 committees, here's some portions of the letter that Sam Farr sent to this Agenda 21 group. He writes, quote, "I am running to congratulate you, the advisory board, and the Action Santa Cruz County Coalition for completing the local Agenda 21 action plan." He goes on to say, "I support the principle of sustainable development." See the terms that are interchangeable. "To balance the needs of the three E's." What he says is economic growth, environmental stewardship, and social equity. When you see those three words put together, listeners, just know that's the collectivist movement right there. Then he goes on to say, quote, "I'm spearheading a similar effort to develop a process for sustainable development planning for the entire Monterey Bay region." Well, that's what Common Ground Monterey Bay, or Monterey, County of Monterey, is all about for those folks of you who live in Monterey. Your new general plan is right out of the Sustainable Development Sam Farr Planning Book. But this is the last statement, and this is what's so important for all Americans to come to understand, because I think he's right when he says this. Quote, "The local Agenda 21 action plan not only has local significance, it will also have regional and national impacts." Well, I think Congressman Farr is exactly right, and that's why we're on the radio here tonight with you, so that we can bring the word out as to what's really behind that ails America today, so that we can begin to develop a program to make ourselves healthy.
Well, if we could go back and touch on the timber. We were talking about the trees right before the break, having been clear-cut and coming back so densely. And so many people are concerned about the current fire hazard here in our county. And when you look back at the process that was used, we had set up a timber technical advisory committee. And lo and behold, it worked out a lot the way the Agenda 21 process worked out, where you had five people with one view and five people with another. The people who wanted management drew up some parts of the document that gave it its credibility, and the other people came in and added all kinds of things that couldn't possibly work. Ended up that these people got zoned out. There's been a lawsuit since then, but this, again, the same process was used. And one of the big reasons to be concerned is not only because people can't manage their forest and it will burn, but because the government is buying up chunks of this land. We have Semper Virens here that is buying up chunks of this land and selling it to the government, and we're ending up with no fire breaks and no management. And then we've had something called a habitat conservation plan that has been...
This is a separate initiative beyond the timber ordinance. There was a timbering ordinance that precluded people from doing anything with respect to managing or using their lands in any economic way.
Right, and I might add that also precludes them from fixing their roads, culverts, erosion, and such when they can't realize any profit off of their many acres that they are paying taxes on. But yes, the Habitat Conservation Plan is an addition to this, and this would be countywide, and it would affect everybody, whether you're in the rural areas or not, but it will mainly impact the rural areas. And a countywide Habitat Conservation Plan will set up federal control over all land in the county through monitoring of endangered species. And this first came up in the Fire Safe Council, which I was participating in, and lo and behold, we had some predetermined outcomes that were poised to come out of that Fire Safe Council as well.
Let me expand a little bit on that, because it was more than endangered species. They had 120 different species of
plants, right,
and bugs, and there's only a handful of endangered species in this county. So it was a very wide swath of potential effect. We're here at Radio Liberty, and we're going to continue the discussion about how it is that the federal government has invaded this county, is invading your county, either has or is about to, because it's a plan for a national program called Sustainable Development, where over 50% of the American landscape is to become devoid of all human action, and where the bulk of the population is to be put into smart growth zones. A quick and easy example of that was a from the San Jose Mercury this week. The city of San Jose, a leader in smart growth, is now proposing to put, quote, 19,000 units on a 120-acre parcel. Now, with no children and assuming two adults per, quote, unit, that's 40,000 people on 120 acres served by the rail line. Welcome back at Radio Liberty. We're here discussing sustainable development and Agenda 21, how the council system makes it operate, how it has a vision, a totally different vision for an America in the 21st century, not an America where your life is yours and where your children look to fill their dreams, but a life where your children's lives will be determined and dictated by the terms of sustainable living in accordance with federal mandates and state and local government implementation. Also that we can be part of a single world where peace comes through threats of intimidation and not through the goodwill of men. So we're here and we're talking more about how the federal government is maniacally putting its council armies into our county and piece by piece, clink by clink, legislation by legislation is chipping away at rural and now urban lifestyles. We've certainly seen many examples of this, Lisa, and you're talking about the Habitat Conservation Plan, which when you talk rural here, we're talking about the Aptos Hills, we're talking about aspects of seascape, we're talking about very populated areas, but if you've got more than quarter of an acre, you're a likely candidate for the application of the Habitat Conservation Plan, which includes 120 plants, and you don't have to have those plants or bugs on your property. You just have to have the mere potential for it, and that becomes, of course, very discretionary application in the hands of a planning department here that has a reputation for being very abusive of its citizens.
Right, and you would have to prove that you don't have the species or that you don't have the habitat that could possibly support the species to not fall under the regulations that are meant to protect the species.
And, of course, if you go out and spend some tens of thousands of dollars to hire somebody to do that, to protect your interest in your home, well, the government's got all the other taxpayers' money. They go out and just get other experts, and then who knows? You know, you just end up in a forever battle where your resources are spent twice. Once out of your pocket and once out of your tax bill.
Right, and then they also have their next plan of attack after you address the first way they come at you. There's always something else around the corner. I've noticed there's no shortage of issues here locally where people are taking private property.
Well, you know, we've seen that with zoning issuances. We've seen that with habitat conservation plans. When we come back from our break, we're gonna show how various agencies around town are taking action to control water and to control the use of property and to herd folks into the smart growth zone. So you're listening to Radio Liberty, the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show. Well, welcome back to Radio Liberty. I'm here with my co-host, Lisa Rudnick, and we're talking about the federal plans that are in our neighborhood. And if you're listening up in eastern Washington, you've got them there, and they're certainly up in upstate New York, and, you know, they're everywhere across America. Let's talk a little bit about the Water Quality Control Board here on the central coast of California, because they've certainly assumed a major role in the in this squeeze of citizen interests in America's rural lands.
Yeah, the Regional Water Quality Control Board has recently been given additional power right before Gray Davis was ousted out of office. He signed a bill that made the Regional Water Quality Control Board's co-lead agencies along with the California Department of Forestry over all timber harvesting. So now, even though we have all this rigorous zoning where very few properties can even timber to begin with, we have the Regional Water Quality Control Board that is now going to require very extensive monitoring for up to several decades after even a light selective harvest, which I might point out is all we can do in this county anyway. There has not been clear cutting in this county for almost 50 years. So a light selective harvest is all that is allowed in the first place. Well, the regional board now has decided, now that they have power, they are going to require this expensive monitoring. I have a very close friend who had a terrible accident almost 2 years ago and has been paralyzed from the chest down, who has a very important hearing coming up this Friday in Salinas before the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And they propose to take 65% of his proceeds, of his profits left over after his harvest for this monitoring. They admit that they aren't even going to use the data, that it's mainly for the landowner and the forester, who already know the property quite well, I might add. So this is going to preclude this person from being able to get back on his property after all of his medical issues from his being paralyzed. It's going to make it very difficult for him to get back onto his restore the coho. And I've pointed out the only way to restore the coho is to start stocking them again. Anyway, the whole premise here is that we have to restore these fish that aren't native.
Based on junk science.
Exactly. And I was at a hearing a few weeks ago where they talked about, isn't it wonderful we have this new approach where everything is fish-centric? And I want people to take note of that.
What was that word?
Fish-centric. We're going to base our lives around the fish.
Okay,
the bogus
fish. When you have a child, okay, you just need to remember that your child in the New World Order has a second fiddle to the local fish.
The fish that didn't exist here naturally anyway. So that's just it. This isn't about saving the environment. It is about power and control.
It's about theft.
It is. It is theft. I've seen so many rural landowners hurt over this whole fish issue, and I'd like our listeners to know that the state of California is currently pumping something like $4 billion into this coho recovery plan, while our local schools are closing for lack of a few hundred thousand dollars.
Well, that $4 billion sounds awfully high to me, but I can attest on a number of scores how sustainable development is what is breaking the federal government. It is what is breaking the state of California's budget. It is what's got the county of Santa Cruz upside down. And I don't think the sustainable developers really care about that, because at the bottom line, the sustainable developers seem to control the monetary system in this country. And so a monetary system that gets stretched like this one is, by virtue of sustainable development implementation, is something that is only going to boomerang on you and me. That's Lisa, you, it's me, and it's the listener. It's every American. That's why it's time to start paying attention to how sustainable development, smart growth, comprehensive planning, visioning processes, and the rest of the warm and fuzzy terms used by the advocate of this global collectivism. You know, it's why we need to start to pay attention. So you can find out information to help support your understanding of this at freedom21santacruz.net. Now, these are citizens, regular people, moms and dads, business owners, workers here or there. We're using our extra time because we see what's happening here, and it's time for us to let out to the rest of the country what it is we've learned. The learning and the process, deciding not to evade that we, the baby boomers and generations before us, have increasingly left our posterity to a very vulnerable position. It's time we take responsibility, stop evading, forego a little of our folly, focus on the real issues of what liberty's about and what needs to be done to maintain it in this country. It's not going to be through the election of George Bush or John Kerry. It's going to have to take something like a strong look at our congressmen. It's time that the United States began to understand what sustainable development is. You're not going to find it from the major media sources. They're too consolidated, too connected in the new economy, the government-private partnership economy, the economy that leaves you, the citizen, and the consumer right out of the mix. We become people that get pushed out of our rural areas, and we become people living in urban areas who find our urban areas are suddenly going to change. Let's talk a little bit about some of those changes that are in store for Santa Cruz. How does that tie into sustainable development, some of the urban changes that we're experiencing?
Right. Well, we do have the rural cleansing going on, and we can come back to some more of how that is happening. And in the urban areas, we have, before our County Board of Supervisors on March 23rd, a copy of the draft housing element will be under their consideration. And this draft housing element is the squeeze that's going to be happening in the urban areas. What the county proposes is high-density, high-rise housing, government-owned housing, government-controlled housing, public employee housing, all down in the hubs. And this is where the people who will agree to not have a car will be allowed to live. In this draft housing element, it's almost laughable that the county has some appendixes that were not in the original copy of the draft housing element that was found online. If you went down to the planning department and gave your name and picked up a hard copy, you could get the appendixes that listed what they called non-vacant underutilized parcels. Well, non-vacant means somebody lives there or has their business there. And so these non-vacant underutilized parcels have now been targeted.
You know, that reminds me, we talked with Susan Swenson last week, who called in and talked about the horror story she has of government enforcement officers coming in and demanding to see into her house, and she not being in remembrance at the moment of her constitutional right to tell them to go away, let them in, and now they're fining this woman $7,000 a day because she had a sign, voice lessons, on her fence, and she had a little shed in her backyard, and she didn't have the proper blessing of the planning department for the construction of her music room following our 1989 earthquake. You know, and now I've come to understand that her house is zoned for 5 units. Now, I wonder if that's what the kind of tactic that they use when they identified your house as one they want.
Well, it could be. We have a very large list in this county of what's known as red tags, and that's what you were just referring to that happened to Susan Swenson when she got red tagged by the planning department. We know of at least 4,000 red tags. We believe there may be as many as 10,000. We're not quite sure. But we have started a new group here in Santa Cruz that is researching that and working for reform within the planning department, and we're having regular meetings. So hopefully we'll get a little farther into that and get a group also that becomes educated about this draft housing element so that we can oppose it.
Now, what a red tag is, for the listeners who don't know that, that's when a county comes up and puts a, you know, you can't do anything notice on your property. They don't just do that, though. They go and file that notice against your title. That means you can't sell your property, you can't refinance your property. You're basically being treated by a bully to a royal feast, a feast of your own misery. And that's certainly what's happening with David Smelt and his inability to cut down the trees on his property that need thinning, okay, because the Water Quality Control Board wants to take 70% of his yield as a water monitoring tax. Nor does it deal with the situation of the people who are in the urban areas of Santa Cruz who are finding a government-forced train system being brought in that everyone acknowledges has absolutely no economic foundation in reality in this smallly populated community. Putting in some sort of rail system makes no sense. Across the mountain in the city of San Jose, a city of nearly a million people, that rail system is an utter failure. It's having to be folded back because of the massive revenue loss that it has. But the government keeps pushing these train systems all over the place. And that's because the plan for smart growth is mass transit, not automobility. They do not want people moving around on their own. They want people living along or within walking distance of this rail line. They're called livable or sustainable communities. And what it really means is just herding us into a narrow area and controlling our action and certainly controlling our mobility. So people in Santa Cruz, I think, increasingly are going to come to understand that this housing plan and this government-funded train plan, are really two sides of the same coin. It is the restructure of all of our society.
I agree, and I do feel for the people along the rail line because many of them are fighting it, thinking they don't want a train in their backyard, and I do believe they will be pressured out of those areas if they don't go along with the game.
Well, certainly, as I described earlier in San Jose, the idea is to put dense government-controlled housing along that rail line. So what we've had here in this community is 30 years of no-growth policy. Well, all they've really been doing there is getting their favored buddies in line to come up and do a collectivist rather than a free market design to our community. And that may feel good for a little while, but collectivist societies have never worked. The reason America's been such a wondrous experiment in the course of human history is because it's predicated upon the ideals and the principles that we discussed in the last hour. And as we abandon that, we abandon our future. And when you hear the sustainable development motto about saving resources for future generations, we have but one duty to our descendants, and that is to preserve for them a right to a life of their own. That is liberty. And liberty has only been experienced or pursued under the ideals of the American founding and the Declaration of Independence. So if you're living in Santa Cruz and you're worried about this nonsense rail line, take a look at the housing program. Understand what they're doing up in the mountains to the mountain owners. Realize that the rural people on 1 to 5 acres out in the hills are going to be squeezed soon. In fact, a lot of these proposals, some of which we've talked about tonight, are directly aimed at the rural residential homeowner. And when we get the squeeze between the mountains and the rural owners and on one side and the squeeze on those along the rail line on the other side, the last to fall, but they will fall, they're definitely targeted, are those folks who are living in suburbia. Because the real objective for sustainable development is to eliminate American suburbia. In fact, when the Rio Accords, which is Sustainable Development Agenda 21, were announced in Rio de Janeiro in 1992, the Secretary General of that conference, a man named Maurice Strong, said the following. He said that current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class, that means American suburbanites, involving high meat intake, the use of fossil fuels, meaning driving cars, appliances, that means refrigeration, home and work air conditioning, and get this, suburban housing are not sustainable. Now, the list of what's not sustainable goes on and on. So my point here is that if you think, well, my life is feeling pretty good, and too bad for those guys in the mountains, too bad for those farmers down in the valley, too bad for those people living along the rail line. No, this is a restructure of every human being in America. It's a restructure that's intended to occur during the 21st century. These first 10 years are critical to the ultimate success of the Sustainable Development Program, because once they have control of the natural resources in the rural lands of this country, it will be an easy process to squeeze the folks in the city. So if you live in Chicago and you know people who are out in the rural lands, get them in touch with this information so that they can organize on local levels, as people in Santa Cruz are beginning to do. You know, it's not a full awakening, but the beginning has started. And that's what's exciting. The prospects of America figuring this out, rediscovering the great foundations that this country was predicated upon, gives tremendous hope for a glorious 21st century. But let's go back to and maybe talk a little about the farmers, Lisa, and how they're seeing being caught in a crossfire that affects or that comes from the sustainable development policies.
Yeah, the latest thing facing the farmers are what's known as irrigation permits. especially in the South County, this is going on. And this is new. The farmers didn't know about it. I guess the local Farm Bureau supposedly has known about it for years and was working on it in some manner, but I guess the local farmers didn't know about it. And this is going to hurt them severely now that they're going to need these irrigation permits. I'll also note that the South County, where the Paro Valley, Valley Water Management Agency is in charge of the water, is seeking to bring in a pipeline that would tie in with the Central Valley Project. Once that happens, the water will be controlled by the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. And why anybody would want the feds controlling their water in the South County farmlands, I cannot understand. Something is wrong here. Something is amiss that these farmers would believe that they should get tied up with the feds controlling their water.
Well, did you say that farmers are going to have to go to a regional water board to get a permit to irrigate their crops?
Right. The same board that will be hearing the timber harvest.
Well, that's got to be a new everywhere. I think when the HCP came to Santa Cruz County and we kicked it out of bed for a few years, it's about ready to come back. But I don't think I've heard of any community anywhere that was going to require their farmers to take the water that under the California Constitution is theirs and have to get a permit to use it to grow the crops that feed all the rest of us. Well, what we've got is a condition where the Pajaro farmers have a sustainable development attack being placed upon them in an effort to collectivize their farms as we collectivize our society. Here we are at Radio Liberty, and we'll be back after a brief break. And what we say to you is think freedom, think up, think liberty, and come to understand what sustainable development is and how it's tyranny for the 21st century. Well, welcome back to Radio Liberty. This is the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show, and I'm here with my co-host Lisa Rudnick, and we're talking about the programs that are occurring through this county. There's more than we can do any justice to in an hour's radio show. I count at least several major federal or state initiatives to reshape the nature of this county. Now, that's not happened suddenly. There's been 30 years of preparation for this by a group called the Santa Cruz Action Network. Now, action is a term that refers directly to the sustainable program. Everything is in action. It means Agenda 21 for our community, teamwork in operation now. So, you know, when you find their paperwork, there is no way one says Agenda 21 is not here in Santa Cruz, that it hasn't been here for a long time, and that it's not in full flavor right now. In fact, we're finding fewer people in positions of power disputing the fact that it's here. It used to be they liked to make fun of us when we brought this issue up. Now they just want anyone who knows about it to be quiet. Well, why do they want people to be quiet? Well, they do because the combination of business and government is what sustainable development is all about. And it's when you combine business with government, that old-fashioned right-wing element. You know, this is really a right-wing concept in my mind, because that's what combining business with government is all about. The left-wing tree huggers are simply there as pawns in this dynamic. Now, we have a caller, Gloria from Spokane. Gloria, are you there?
Enjoying. I've been listening to your program for the last 3 weeks, and I'm enjoying every minute of it. And since I've been listening, I've been really carefully reading my books and review. And just last week, there was an article says study cites urban sprawl, and they cited a Northwest Environmental Watch's Cascadia Scorecard report. And this is just appalling how they cite that. It says sprawl. This is report says sprawling communities jack up transportation costs, lock people into a fattening, auto-dependent lifestyle, and gobble farmland in open space. And it goes on and basically paints the person who has built this beautiful home in the foothills of Mount Spokane as just this terrible person who's using up all the resources. And it goes right along with what you're saying. And then I noticed that the new city council member that was just put in, just voted in by 6 members of the city council just last night, in fact, happens to be, she openly admits she's an environmentalist, she's a lawyer, and her goal is to implement sustainable development. So I'm just wondering, what do I do now, living in this area, because now that I'm reading these articles, I'm seeing that they're, you know, openly saying that they're
Gloria,
going to be implementing these
programs. We'll be right back. Well, Gloria, what you're seeing is what's happening everywhere, and it is a small clique of people who are behind this. Many, maybe most of them, are really just useful people to those who understand the philosophy that's behind it. But the practical question is what to do about it, and that's what you're asking us. You can call us at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz at 831-684-2232. And we can have this discussion more fully. But on the air, what I'd say is this. You can start by looking at our website. Get yourself familiar. And then remember that all political action starts in the neighborhoods. And while Agenda 21 was implemented in the neighborhoods, it started in Geneva. And it came through Washington, D.C. via George Bush Sr. But the way we're going to have to fight back is doing what the people in Wisconsin have been doing, as we learned in our first week, or the people in Maine, or the people in Texas. There are people successfully grappling with this issue. And it means organizing at the local level. It means finding other people who are aware of these problems and willing to commit some time and energy, and some folks in the community need to commit some money. Now, there's no money in the freedom movement at this point in time, but there is a rising consciousness, and there's some great intellectual backing for what's going on, but mostly it's just going to take the common sense of people like you organizing with other people in your community. We are preparing some documentation that will soon be available that will help you communicate with your elected officials as to what sustainable development is and what it is they need to do so as to not subject your community to it. But I always like to think, too, the real first place to start is to come to an understanding of what is private property, because it's our failure as Americans to respect our neighbor's property that has led us to this mess. You know, when you say, I don't like somebody's house sitting there on that hill that way, well, you know, you may not like their house, but somebody's not going to like what you do. And so once we lose to respect the rights of our neighbors to the use and enjoyment of their private property, we lose our own freedom. So the first place to start is just that old-fashioned notion, you know, lead by example, remind people that someone else's property is theirs, and then come to those people's defense and organize around the cases where people's rights have been abused.
You know, another thing that could help would be a working definition. If you guys could write up some kind of, like, and define your terms. I mean, I'm trying to figure them out. I mean, smart growth, just all rural cleansing. I mean, I'm realizing rural cleansing refers to getting rid of the people.
Yes.
Getting them out of the hills, getting them out of the rural areas, off
yeah.
the farmland.
Getting them down to smart growth zones. Now, we do define all of these. We have a PowerPoint that we've put on here and there and around the country where we do have all the terms defined. It's a little tougher to do here on the radio. But uh-huh. contact us, and Eastern Washington is ready for this, and I know Radio Liberty gets a lot of calls from there, and we'll help
well,
give you some ideas.
Well, if we could pick up your PowerPoint presentation and, you know, just so I had all those terms, so I could understand. It's almost like when I first learned about education reform.
Okay.
Everybody
fair enough.
Got together, and it was kind of difficult to figure out exactly what was going on, but...
We will pursue that. I want to
okay.
thank you for your call.
Thank
and
you
look,
so much.
I'll
you
look
guys,
forward
I
to talking to you more.
Looking forward to next week, too.
Well, good. Tell
thank
your friends
you so
and spread the word.
I will.
Thank you for your call.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Sustainable development sweeping the countryside. From the California coastline, we can see it nationwide. Coming soon to a town near you, biological diversity. Yeah, the eco police got plans for you and your so-called liberty. Hey, hey. Yeah, they're gonna save the planet, but not your liberty.
Well, thank you for joining us these past 3 weeks here at Radio Liberty for the initial Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show. It's been good for us to begin to express these questions on a broader scale, and there's certainly people, as you've been introduced to, all around the country who are aware and as a movement begins to emerge. I invite you to look at our website at freedom21santacruz.net and the advancedbulletin.net. And until next week.